Peter in Wonderland by Jesse H. Speed. Chapter 1. The Rabbit. Peter Pan was 30 years old when he saw the rabbit. It had been a long time since anyone called him Peter Pan, of course. Most people called him Pete, or just R.I.U., if they bothered at all. He hadn't heard Pan since he was a kid, the kid who flew above rooftops, but not the boy who woke up in an orphanage, alone and confused in East London, sometime around 1980. Now it was the summer of 1997, but back then he still half believed he'd wake up and find the second star to the right waiting just outside his bedroom window. But it never came. Instead, there were social workers and charity bins, foster homes that smelled of other children's ghosts. A series of families who wanted to fix him, or tame him, or worse, love him. He never stayed long. Pan never did like being caged, and neither did the new Peter. This new Peter couldn't fly, but was still swift enough for a quick exit. Peter's flat sat above the kebab shop, like an afterthought. Kind of like a leftover box of rooms, squeezed between flaking brick walls and greasy kitchen vents. From the street, you could almost miss the narrow door that led up the cracked concrete steps. The doorbell hadn't worked in years. Neither had the letterbox, though that didn't matter much since Peter rarely got post. Inside, the flat was one long sigh of faded carpets and second-hand furniture. The living room doubled as everything: lounge, dining room, sometimes bedroom when Peter fell asleep on the sagging brown sofa instead of dragging himself to the narrow bed, tucked behind a beaded curtain in what passed for a separate room. Near the window sat a rickety table covered in mismatched mugs, old takeaway boxes, and a scattering of coins and bottle caps. The radiator under the window rattled like an old man's cough whenever it bothered to work at all. The glass pane was smudged with Tinker's paw prints. It's where she liked to perch and watch the pigeons on the opposite ledge. Sometimes Peter thought she was waiting for something out there. The wallpaper was an uncertain beige, peeling at the corners where damp crept through the plaster. A cheap poster of an old band tour, The Cure 1989, was tacked up next to the fridge, a relic from a charity shop bin. In the corner sat an old TV balanced on a stack of yellowing newspapers. The remote was long lost, so Peter changed channels by jabbing the buttons on the side. Sometimes the screen flickered to static, just to remind him who was in charge. On the shelf by the sofa, a dusty row of library books he'd never returned leaned drunkenly against a cracked snow globe. The cheap plastic kind, with a tiny London skyline inside. He'd found it on a bus years ago and kept it, though he couldn't have said why. Next to the sofa, Tinker's food bowls sat on a battered old baking tray to catch the spills. Cat hair clung to the cushions, the rug, and, of course, Peter's coat. Although it was messy, it was also a comfort that he wasn't entirely alone, even if she mostly ignored him, except when she wanted something. At night, the flat smelled faintly of fried lamb drifting up from the kebab shop below, mixing with the musty scent of old carpets and the occasional ghost of cigarette smoke from the neighbor's flat next door. Sometimes, when Peter lay awake on the sofa staring at the ceiling with the one water stain above the light bulb shaped vaguely like a bird in flight, he liked to imagine that if he squinted hard enough, the whole flat would lift off the ground, slip its greasy walls, and drift away like an island in the sky. On the day he saw the rabbit, Peter woke late. He'd forgotten to set an alarm, but it didn't matter. He'd already been fired, and things like alarm clocks weren't on his list of worries. The temp agency had stopped calling after he walked off a warehouse job 2 days ago when the manager shouted at him for knocking over a stack of boxes that must have been filled with golden eggs given how angry it made his boss. Peter had a few words for exactly where Mr. Armstrong could lay his golden eggs, then he walked out and all the way home that afternoon, walking but wanting to fly. To feel the cool air in his hair and hear the wind whistling around his ears, to taste the clouds. Not anymore, though. So he just walked. He lay in bed until noon, listening to the distant drone of traffic and the argument of pigeons on the window ledge. Tinker lay curled on his chest, purring like a small, judgmental motor. He thought about making tea. He didn't. Eventually, hunger forced him up. He pulled on a shirt that smelled only faintly of sweat, stumbled to the fridge and found nothing inside but a half-empty milk bottle and a single egg that he expected might be older than him. He found some takeaway boxes from the restaurant downstairs, but questioned them as well. He poured the milk for Tinker instead. She lapped it up without so much as a thank you, then glared at him when the bowl was empty. All right, he grumbled. How about a walk? Stretch our legs. Look at the real world for a bit, yeah? Tinker flicked her tail, unimpressed. She hated the leash, but she hated being left behind more. She loved going outside, but Peter didn't trust her on her own. Even though he found her outside his apartment, he always thought she'd wander back out to the wild if he let her out. If she wanted freedom, Peter felt bad for being her jailer. But when he thought about it honestly, he just didn't want to be alone again. Outside, the air was damp and cold in that clingy London way that seeps into your bones. Peter pulled his coat tighter around himself. It had a missing button and pockets full of holes. He kept meaning to fix it. He never did, even though he considered himself competent at sewing. He thought of her whenever he set out to do the task, and that was enough distraction to keep him from it. The pavement was slick with last night's rain. He stepped over a broken umbrella, half submerged in a puddle, tugging gently when Tinker decided to sniff it, as if it might bite her. He passed the newsagents. The old man behind the counter gave him a nod. Peter nodded back, though he couldn't remember the man's name. Maybe Fernando. At the bus stop, two teenagers were fighting over a tin of cheap cider. Peter watched them for a moment. The boy had a sharp grin. The girl wore a leather jacket three sizes too big. For a second, he thought he saw a flash of himself in their crooked delight, their careless noise. He wondered where they'd be in 20 years. He hoped not here. Peter tugged gently on the leash, urging Tinker away from sniffing an overflowing trash can. The little gray cat resisted, then trotted ahead, her tail flicking in mild annoyance. Peter was halfway down Maple Street when he heard someone call his name. Pete. He turned, squinting into the late afternoon sun. A woman in a crisp navy blazer and stylish sneakers was standing by the bus stop, a tote bag slung over her shoulder. It took him a second, and then he recognized her. Lucy Kendricks. She'd been a line cook at the Rabbit's Foot back when he was scrubbing crusted pans in the back. Lucy. Wow. Hey. He smiled, suddenly aware of how rumpled his old coat looked. Lucy's face lit up with polite warmth. Oh my God, it is you? Wow, it's been... years? She glanced down at Tinker, who sat regally at Peter's feet. Are you walking your cat? Peter gave the leash a little shake. Yeah. She gets restless if I don't. She's basically a dog in a cat suit. Lucy laughed, a high, easy sound that made Peter feel young and old at the same time. That's actually really cool. I don't think I've ever seen anyone do that. Tinker sniffed her shoes, unimpressed. So what are you up to these days? Lucy asked. Oh, you know, Peter shrugged. Staying busy. Lucy nodded too quickly. That's good. Keeping busy is good. She hugged her tote closer, the university logo on the side catching the light. I'm actually heading to a class. I'm working on my master's in urban planning. Got a placement lined up with the city council next month, so... yeah, busy too. That's great, Peter said. He meant it, but it came out too soft. They stood there for a moment, the silence stretching as Tink circled Peter's legs. Lucy cleared her throat. Well, it was really nice seeing you, Pete. And your cat. What's his name? Her. Tinker. Tinker, she repeated, giving the cat a pitying little grin. Well, keep in touch, okay? Yeah, totally. He nodded. Lucy gave a small wave and stepped onto the bus that had just pulled up. Peter watched her go, then looked down at Tinker, who was pawing at a patch of dandelions. Guess it's just you and me, girl, he murmured. Tinker flicked her tail and tugged him onward. He kept walking, past a line of brick terraces that leaned at odd angles. Past the burnt-out shell of a chip shop that had caught fire last winter and never reopened. Past the playground with its rusted roundabout and swings that creaked in the wind, even when empty. He liked the playground. He liked standing at the fence and imagining it full of children's voices. He could practically hear the squeals and shrieks, and all the chaos that made life taste bright. But today the swings were still. The roundabout turned lazily on its own. Peter adjusted Tinker's leash when she tangled herself around his ankles. She hissed at him, more insulted than angry. "Don't look at me like that," he muttered. "It's your walk to, you know." She sniffed the grass, tail flicking. She'd always been a cat, who thought she was something else, a dog, or like a small fox, maybe, or a queen in disguise. Peter liked to think. That's why they got on. Neither of them really belonged here. He cut through the fence at the far end of the estate where the council hadn't bothered to mend the gap. Beyond it was the thin, ragged strip of forest that clung stubbornly to the edge of the city. Most people said it was a dumping ground. You'd find old fridges, bits of mattress springs, the occasional trolley half swallowed by brambles. But Peter liked it. It felt older than the streets behind him, older than the shops and the flats and the bus stop. Sometimes, if the wind was right, he swore he could almost hear the sea in the trees. It was there, halfway down the muddied path, that he stopped. Tinker froze too, her ears flicking. In the middle of the path, nosing at a cluster of wet leaves, was a rabbit. White as bone. Small, but not young. And draped over its tiny shoulders, absurdly, impossibly, was a Nirvana t-shirt, faded so thin the black was almost grey. Peter stared. The rabbit stared back. "You've got to be kidding me," he said. His voice cracked and dry. The rabbit twitched its nose. Its eyes were dark and bright at the same time. "Where'd you nick that shirt from, mate?" Peter asked, taking a step closer. He half expected it to vanish, like a drunk dream. Instead, it turned, flicked its cotton tail, and bounded off the path. Peter glanced at Tinker, who looked unimpressed. "Oh, come on, don't give me that face. We can't just let him run off dressed like that, can we?" He tugged the leash, stumbling forward, feet squelching in the damp earth. Tinker hissed but followed. They ducked under branches, through tangles of bramble. Peter felt alive in a way he hadn't in years. He was breathless, reckless. His chest ached, but he didn't care. He lost the rabbit once, then caught sight of it again. Just a flash of white darting between trees, the grin on that old band shirt flickering in the gloom. Finally, it stopped at the base of an old oak. The roots curled, like claws around a hollow in the ground. Peter slowed. Tinker pressed against his leg, tail puffed up. The rabbit was gone. But the hole was there, deep, black, wide, and waiting. Peter crouched, peered into the dark. The earth smelled old, like damp moss, something sweet and rotting beneath. He laughed, softly. "Well, Tink, old girl," he whispered to the cat at his heel. "In for a penny," he leaned forward. The earth gave way, and the world fell with him.